morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Thursday, September 19, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Some Western diplomatic missions in South Sudan express concern over extension of the country's transition.
The ruling elite in South Sudan has forgotten that the country belongs to the masses, and the Troika and other missions that have released a statement, I think, are really on point.
Ghana's main opposition demands an audit of the 2024 voters register ahead of December polls. Experts said African-led medical research is needed to deal with the continent's health issues. Pressure grows on Britain ahead of the Commonwealth Summit to pay reparations for slavery. Tanzania's president tells Western diplomats to stop interfering in her country's domestic matters.
The diplomats, actually, they just add their voices by issuing different statements. All of the statements just condemned the death and the act of people who are disappearing without any proper action.
And Hezbollah threatens revenge for pager explosions that killed 12 and wounded thousands. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Some Western diplomatic missions in South Sudan have expressed disappointment with the South Sudanese government's decision last week to extend the country's transition by 2 years. In a statement posted on X, formerly Twitter, the United Kingdom, United States, Canada, France, Germany, and the Netherlands said that the decision reflects the failure of the government to implement the 2018 peace agreement despite its promises. William Pei is a South Sudanese-American and executive director of the Institute for Peace Development.
I think they are correct, because people of South Sudan have been on this situation for quite some time now. The ruling elite in South Sudan has forgotten that the country belongs to the masses, and the Troika and other missions that have released a statement, I think, are really on point. There is no need, even if we give the current elite in South Sudan 100 years, they will still kick the can down the road. So the extension is an insult, and also extending the suffering and delay the justice and democracy in the country, because they have been on this since 2015. So it's another way that they find ruling South Sudan without really putting the country on the path of democracy.
There's a sentence in the statement where it says, "We expect the government of South Sudan to come forward with a credible and transparent plan as to how these will be financed." What do you think they are saying?
Well, they are saying that you have to provide a clear roadmap so that those who are... They have done this in 2018 when they had the revitalized agreement, that they say they will get it done within the time frame that was put forth. Now, they did not provide how are they going to do it. If you are going to provide a plan by saying that by a certain date, there are expectations that are attached to those timelines. And the current elites in South Sudan, especially the SPLM faction, both in the government and also, I would say, this is one party that is fighting itself, that have hijacked the entire country. So if you don't have the resources, even if you keep extending it, you're just postponing the inevitable, the collapse of the state. So what they are saying, in my understanding, is that you did this now, this is the third time that they have done it, or the fourth time. Because in 2015, there was an agreement. By 2016, they went over and fighting among themselves. And then by 2018, they revitalized it. And then they came up with this big government.
You think that these diplomatic missions are telling the South Sudan government that they must get ready to pay for this extension?
Yes. Not only that, you know, the world is actually the one that has been paying, supporting the South Sudanese. I would say a large majority, both in the country and outside, relying on UNAID agents. And these guys, they keep kicking and postponing by admitting that they have failed and actually giving back power to the people to be able to establish a path to get out of this current mess that they have created. So even if they say that, yes, we're going to extend it for another 24 months, which they did, where they came up with a roadmap, that roadmap has now elapsed. They have not done a thing. So you have only a certain percentage, or less than 50% has been implemented. You can give them 100 years and they will not even implement regardless. But they have money for things that they do. Because it's not that South Sudan do not have money. The money is there, but the elite have captured the state. These are just individuals that want to extend themselves and want to stay in power. And they are comfortable.
William Pei is a South Sudanese-American and executive director of the Institute for Peace Development. He was speaking with us from St. Paul, Minnesota, USA. Tanzanian President Samia Suluhu Hassan this week told foreign diplomats to stop interfering in her country's domestic matters. She said Tanzania will not take instructions from any country on how to investigate alleged politically linked violence. Mohamed Ali Kibayo, a member of the main opposition Chadema party, was abducted on September 6th in broad daylight. His body was found in a Dar es Salaam neighborhood. President Suluhu Hassan called for a swift and thorough investigation. The United States mission, European Union, British, and Canadian High Commissions called for an independent and transparent investigation. Neville Mina is the secretary for Tanzania's Editors Forum. He tells me that the views of the foreign missions reflect the general mood in the country.
President Samia had just reacted, especially basing on the anger shown by the general public on the Ali Kibao's death. We can recall that Kibao was actually taken from the bus in which he was traveling from Dar es Salaam to Tanga. He was a known person, and it seemed that after being taken from the bus by the people who were armed, the incident itself attracted the public concern, as it was suspected that those who taken Kibao from the bus were security people. Now the question came that how comes that security people took the person from the bus, and if get found dead after 24 hours? It raised a lot of concern from the public. Everyone actually was pointing fingers at the government. The diplomats, actually, they just had their voices by issuing different statements. We had a statement from the U.S. Embassy, from European Union representatives in Tanzania, plus Canadian and Norwegian embassies. All of the statements just condemned the death and the act of people who are disappearing without any proper action from the security systems in Tanzania.
The president called for a thorough investigation of Kibayo's death a week ago. What is the movement on that investigation?
Actually, nothing has been released in terms of findings of police investigation on Ali Kibao's whereabouts. From the time he was kidnapped, maybe the police, after finalizing their investigation, perhaps they will release the information so that the public will know that what really happened or what was behind Ali Kibao's death.
President Suluhu said the diplomats appear to take much interest in Kibao's death, and she wished they devoted similar level of concern about other deaths, according to her, in Tanzania, such as children and the albinos. What's your reaction?
I can say President Samia was a bit angry. Her facial expression shows that she was a bit bitter, and she was a bit bitter against what actually the comments from the diplomats. The reaction can't be the same. People have been disappearing. Yes, children are in danger because of kidnapping again. But Ali Kibao's one was a bit peculiar. As I have said, this person was traveling in the bus, and he was taken on the daylight. The bus was full of other passengers. It is very unfortunate that they couldn't even react, maybe because the people who popped in the bus were armed. So people get scared. And this person is well known, a retired army officer who has served this country for a couple of years. And from there, he joined the political elite when he served as CCM publicity secretary in a certain level of village over there at his hometown. So the incident itself attracted the public interest. And the question was, if at all a person can be taken on the daylight and found dead on the other day, what will be our next destination regarding safety and security?
Neville Mina is the secretary for Tanzania's Editors Forum. He was speaking with us from the capital, Dar es Salaam. Ghana's Electoral Commission says it's open to engaging the opposition National Democratic Congress, the NDC, to address the party's fears about the voters' register ahead of presidential election this December. NDC supporters took to the streets on Tuesday, demanding the Electoral Commission audit the 2024 voters register ahead of the December polls. The party said the failure to do so would be a threat to Ghana's democracy. James Guno is the NDC Volta Region Secretary. He tells me that the party has identified several discrepancies, including purging thousands of registered voters from the list.
The key reason for our protest is that we believe that the Electoral Commission of Ghana has compromised the integrity of the voters' register that was recently exhibited at the various polling stations across the country. We have identified some discrepancies that cannot be tolerated. We cannot allow the Electoral Commission to go into this general election with the register. The register is not fit for purpose.
What are some of the key discrepancies that you are alleging?
We have identified over 243,000 people that were transferred, you know, illegally. Then we have also identified over 15,000 unidentified voter transfers that we could not trace within the register. And then also about 4,000 registered voters were deleted from the voters' register, including my deputy, the deputy voter regional secretary of the National Democratic Congress, NDC, Bright Koshi Eger. He went to the exhibition center and could not find his name. Also, there are evidence that the register that the commission gave to the political parties is different, clear different from what they exhibited at the polling station. So we are calling on the Electoral Commission of Ghana, one, to institute an independent forensic audit for us to clean the register. Two,
the Electoral Commission said it is aware of your demand, and it is willing to work with you to respond to your demand. So because it believes that having a free and fair election is very important, are you willing to give them time to address your concerns?
The Electoral Commission also admitted that some people who did transfer in 2020 were added to the recent transfer. So that is a clear discrepancy. That is not supposed to be the case, because if somebody had transferred his or her vote in 2020, it ends there. You don't transfer that onto the current register. And then also, if the Electoral Commission today is saying that they are ready, we want to see that in their action, because the 7th December election cannot be postponed. We will run into a constitutional crisis.
James Gunu is the Volta Regional Secretary of the Opposition National Democratic Congress, NDC Party. He was speaking with me from the Ghanaian capital, Accra. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Thursday, September 19th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. One of the hurdles to improving healthcare systems for African countries is the shortage of scientists and the lack of meaningful medical research on the continent. The African Population and Health Research Center, supported by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, hopes to change that by enabling researchers and policymakers in three large African countries to develop more extensive and relevant research programs. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Addis Ababa.
According to a 2017 report by the World Economic Forum, Africa is home to 15% of the world's population and 25% of the world's disease burden, but produces just 2% of the world's medical research. The report said of the medical research that does occur, much of it fails to prioritize diseases or health problems that are most pressing for Africans. A group of African health researchers and institutions are now pushing for the continent's medical research to be more focused on the continent's own medical problems. The African Population and Health Research Center is bringing together scientists, academics, policymakers, and government officials from Ethiopia, Kenya, and Nigeria. Their goal is to strengthen African leadership in research and development, ensuring that the findings from these researchers are relevant and accessible to decision makers, leading to better healthcare systems across the continent. Catherine Choktunji is the head of the organization. She says African-led research can help solve health problems on the continent much more easily and quickly.
If we want the research to be done by Africans in Africa on African issues, that where the priorities for what research should be done are defined not just by academics, but by the people who are going to use that research for decision making. So I think really what we are trying to achieve is to shift what is research and what is it for, and to create an army of African scientists that do research to solve African problems.
Dr. Hadiza Galade is a professor of obstetrics and gynecology in Bayero University in Nigeria. Galade's home country accounts for about 28% of maternal deaths worldwide each year. She and other researchers from four African countries, Birmingham University in the UK and the World Health Organization, published research on the best way to save women who are dying from postpartum hemorrhage or excessive bleeding after childbirth. Their innovation, a calibrated obstetric drip, which is placed beneath a birthing mother, allows physicians to collect and precisely measure blood and fluid loss.
We had an innovation of one providing a drip. Now, the drip is just put underneath the buttocks of the woman when she's going to deliver, and then as soon as she delivers, any blood that comes out goes to the drip. So we have an objective assessment. When we now find out that she is bleeding and she's lost this amount of blood, instead of doing what we call sequential treatment, do a bundle treatment. And when we did this, we found out that we could reduce the rate of severe PPH leading to maternal death by 60%.
African researchers face challenges ranging from a lack of reliable data and funding to poor infrastructure to cultural and religious issues. With the support of the Gates Foundation, Africa Research Connect was developed to connect and enhance the visibility of scientists, institutions, policymakers, and donors. Mohammed Yusuf, VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
The three candidates vying to become the next Secretary General of the Commonwealth have all given strong backing for Britain and other European powers to pay reparations to their former colonies for past atrocities, including the transatlantic slave trade. Henry Richwell has more from London.
The Commonwealth emerged from the ashes of Britain's empire after World War II. The vast majority of its 56 members are former British colonies. The organisation is set to choose a new Secretary General at its Heads of Government meeting in Samoa next month. The three candidates for the job, all from Africa, were asked at a recent event at London's Chatham House whether they support the idea of Britain paying its former colonies reparations for the transatlantic slave trade and other past atrocities. All three were in favour. Shirley Botchwe is the Ghanaian candidate and the country's current Minister for Foreign Affairs.
Financial reparations is good. However, the conversation is now moving to other reparations in kind. And so either way, it's fine. But I stand for reparations. Whether or not the Commonwealth has a role to play will depend on the heads of government.
Joshua Setipa is a candidate from Lesotho.
The Commonwealth has a role because it is an issue that affects more than half of the members of the Commonwealth.
At the last Commonwealth summit in Rwanda in 2022, Britain's then prince, now King Charles, spoke of his deep sorrow over the slave trade. But Britain has rejected any form of reparations. It can no longer be dismissed, says Kingsley Abbott, director of the Institute of Commonwealth Studies at the University of London.
Reparations doesn't just equal monetary compensation under international law. It can take many forms, like restitution, and compensation and rehabilitation and satisfaction, things like, you know, meaningful apologies, public acknowledgement, memorialization, and things like that. And so this is a critical ongoing conversation that I think will remain high on the international agenda. And so therefore, of course, the Commonwealth, you know, has a role to play.
Britain's former Prime Minister Rishi Sunak argued that, quote, trying to unpick our history is not the right way forward. His successor, Keir Starmer, is yet to make his position clear. But the pressure will likely grow as officials from Britain and many of its former colonies gather as equals at the Commonwealth Summit next month. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News, London.
Colonel Claude PV, Guinea's most wanted fugitive after his August conviction of crimes against humanity for involvement in a 2009 massacre, has been arrested in Liberia, his lawyer told the French news agency AFP on Wednesday. Little else has emerged over the conditions and date of PV's arrest by Liberian police, with no formal notice issued by the Liberian or Guinean authorities. Lebanese media report that at least three people were killed and dozens wounded in a second wave of explosion targeting the militant group Hezbollah. More electronic communication devices detonated on Wednesday after exploding pagers killed at least 12 people and wounded almost 3,000 on Tuesday. Hezbollah has vowed revenge. Linda Grastin reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
Although Israel has not taken responsibility for the exploding pager attack Tuesday, it is widely blamed. Israeli security experts say the explosives were implanted into the pagers as they were manufactured. Ayel Pinko is a former Israeli intelligence official.
In order to get this kind of wounds, you need to have between 1 to 2 grams of type of explosives, which is not a big technological issue. You just need to open the beeper. Once again, it's a whole supply chain. You need to open the beeper to put a very not sensitive explosive that it will not get operated in the time that you don't want it to operate, and a small operational card that can get commands from the outside. If we all remember how a beeper is working, you just send some kind of message from a communication tower, and it spread all over.
Hezbollah ordered the pagers from a Taiwanese company called Gold Apollo. A representative of the company said the pagers had actually been made by BAC, a Hungarian manufacturer. Pinko said planning technologically complex operations like these takes a long time.
This is an intelligence operations that was very well planned, prepared for more than 1.5 years.
Israel is bracing for promised retaliation by Hezbollah, and several airlines canceled flights. But there was no sense of panic in the country, and schools and workplaces were open as usual. Israeli analysts warn that a direct conflict between Israel and Hezbollah would likely escalate to a regional war, and they say Israel would call for U.S. support. Orna Mizrahi is a senior research fellow at the Institute for National Security Studies in Tel Aviv.
I suppose we are going to see more than before attacks from Iraq, Houthis, even direct attacks from Iran, and maybe this time also from Syria. So it's going to be a full-scale war, and we need the Americans beside us.
U.S. officials say they did not know about the alleged Israeli operation in advance and have been working to find a diplomatic way out of the conflict between Israel and Hezbollah. Israel says it just wants its 60,000 evacuated residents to be able to return to their homes near the Lebanese border. Linda Gradstein, VOA News, Jerusalem.
And that's it for this Thursday, September 19th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for being our guest this morning. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton in Washington, saying, have a great day, but please be safe, whatever you do.